Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Ford, featuring Available Sync. Now you can control your media player with simple voice commands. Enjoy your drive while you easily search and listen to your favorite songs. Check it out on the 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. Welcome to All About Android, episode 86, recorded on Tuesday, November 20th, 2012. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Aaron Newcomb.
You're not Ron Richards. What happened to Ron Richards? Or did you miss him?
No, although I could have. Well, I'm kind of hungry, but he is not here.
He's not here.
He's busy with a previous engagement.
Yeah, well, you know, he was going to be on today, and then last minute was like, you know what? I just realized my girlfriend is flying in tonight, not tomorrow night, and he's her ride. I think this makes sense that he skip out on the show.
Well, you know, you got to have your priorities.
Yes, you do.
It's important.
Absolutely. And with the American holiday, Thanksgiving coming up, I was in a giving mood, so I was like, okay, fine. You can be her ride at the airport. That's fine. But thank you so much for joining us, joining me on this week's show. Chad is back there. He's technical director of this show.
Hey, hey. How's
really
it going?
Really appreciate
it. I even have my own lower third. Look at that.
Yes.
Wow.
Excellent.
Nice.
Stoked to have you chipping in this week as well. Anytime, in fact. It's awesome that we have you kind of running the show behind the scenes, and I don't think that I thank you enough. This week, we're going to be discussing a few things. The end of December as we know it. We'll get to that in a second. The end of fragmentation, possibly. The end of patent settlements. And the beginning of a whole host of apps and new hardware. Isn't that sweet?
It's like a poem.
Yeah, it kind of is. I should have thought about that more. That's about as good as my poems ever get.
I don't know.
But first, let's dive into the news. So the end of December. Remember the end of December. Android 4.2 came with a nice little surprise that everybody seemed to be freaking out all weekend over, that in the People app, there's a little, you know, kind of a selector for, you know, choosing, I believe, birthdays or, right. or whatever to right. associate with a particular person. And December is missing from the list. The birthday bug. And you know, it probably wouldn't be as noticeable if December weren't like a few days from now.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of late in the game to actually be missing December.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice this. I guess I'm not sure who did until someone... I don't use the People app that often, I guess.
Neither
so,
do I.
I guess maybe not a lot of people do, but as soon as somebody noticed it, all of a sudden it was like, whoa, how did you miss that? How can you miss December? It's Christmas. Come on.
And missing a date just in general. Here, I'll see if I can... create a new contact here and, you know, prove to you that it's true. And there it is. November, January. There's no December in there. I don't see it. I don't know. Is this really a big deal? It's kind of an embarrassing omission.
It is. I mean, this is a bug that should have been caught by quality control checkers early on. I mean, this should never have happened. And they've actually apologized for it. There was a post today, I believe, on the Android blog. I saw it on Google+. Where they actually apologize. Sorry, we understand. There's an update coming out. Don't worry.
We understand you guys like December.
We understand you like December and Christmas and all that kind of stuff. but yeah, so they're gonna come out with a fix for it very very soon. So.
Hopefully, they come out with it in like a week. The next week.
You would hope so. I can't imagine that this is something that is more than
that
a line of code.
Mm-hmm.
Something got omitted. You know, there should have been, they put in 11 when they should have put 12, so there was only 11 months, something like that. It really is probably just the picker, right? I mean, it really is probably just the picker that doesn't have the December built in. So
and
sure.
only in the People app, not
only
in the calendar
app. So that's really odd, right?
I mean, People apps in the past have had December, I have to imagine.
Yeah. So
yeah, who knows? But I imagine, yes, as you say, they're probably going to get this fixed real quick. Like,
yep. All right, let's move right on. There's a new SDK license. If you are an Android developer, you may want to pay attention. There's a new SDK license which basically Google is saying, look, no more fragmentation. If you're a developer, you need to make sure that what you do is up to snuff so that we avoid fragmentation. Of course, fragmentation has been one of the biggest problems or sore spots for the Android ecosystem in general.
Certainly become a bad word
Android
world.
Absolutely. And it was brought up in the Apple launch a couple months ago, whenever that was. You know, so they're actually capitalizing on it. And I think even, was it Steve Ballmer brought up a little bit?
Yeah, he
alluded
did.
To fragmentation on the Android ecosystem. So basically what Google did was they came out with a new SDK that says you won't take any actions that may cause or result in the fragmentation of Android, including but not limited to distributing, participating in the creation, or promoting in any way a software development kit derived from the SDK. Everyone basically is flipping out thinking that maybe Google is trying to go after Amazon or other marketplaces, like third-party marketplaces, to try to protect itself, right? Because they obviously have a big stake in the game. They want people to go to the Google Play Store and get their apps there. Makes sense. But I don't think so. I think this is really just them protecting themselves from maybe someone with more malicious intent that's basically trying to create or take what Android, the Android platform, and create something that's maybe way off base and really diluting the user experience, getting the user experience to a point where people just get confused and don't want to use it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's really malicious towards competition.
No, it's in my opinion, it's not targeted at the Amazons of the world. It's targeted more at the alien. I believe I would pronounce it Alien in the past because that's how it's spelled, but I think someone corrected me. Alien, but you know, a few months back, Alien and Acer had this kind of derivative version of Android, splintering of the source that actually isn't really compatible with Android as you know, as it is now, but used parts of the code base, parts of the framework, and then, you know, created their own app store that had pirated Google apps in there as well as other pirated apps. And Google kind of stepped in at that point and said, hey, no, you can't do this, and kind of put off Acer's kind of plans of releasing a device that was going to operate in this kind of land, the alien land that they created. So this, I think, is more kind of targeted towards that. Yeah, it would be a bad thing for, I would imagine, for the Android ecosystem as a whole if Google was to lay a stake in the ground and say, no, Amazon, you can't do what you're doing. That's tremendously successful and totally within the boundaries of open source.
Right. And, I mean, you could argue that it's actually promoting the ecosystem, the entire, maybe not the marketplace, but the rest of the Android ecosystem in terms of Android putting their money behind the Amazon putting their money behind the Android platform, developing on Android. I mean, that helps out when you have, even if it's a slightly competitive company or a partner that's slightly competitive, having them develop on your platform is always preferred, right? I mean, they could have gone off and done something completely different, maybe partnered with Microsoft. So it's still beneficial to have them using this. And I think that's, so I don't think Google's out for that. Now, the question is, how are they going to enforce this, right? So you agree to this when you download the SDK, you agree to this license. How the only way you could really enforce it is to take them to court, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, what did Google do in the previous case? I mean, I guess maybe it's a little different because in the previous case, Acer is part of the Open Handset Alliance.
Right.
And that was kind of at the crux of this, which is you're part of the Open Handset Alliance, but you're splintering the code, which is something that in the OHS is not allowed, or the OHA. So, you know, maybe they had a little bit more of a leg to stand on in that case, and Acer wants to still be part of the Open Handset Alliance, so they complied. But, yeah, you're right. I don't know how they necessarily do that. Hopefully this is, you know, maybe one of those kinds of things that, because it's in place, shows that they're addressing it. And, you know, maybe whereas before it might have been a little cloudy, a little murky, and like, I don't know, maybe we can get away with doing something like this. Now it's like, no, there's something specifically that says this right here is not okay.
Right.
So I actually have a question about this. As a layman looking in at open source, one of the examples that people would bring up to me is, yeah, if it's open source, like anyone can grab it and then make it whatever the heck they want. And it seems like something like this is exactly what, in my mind, open source is. But that's wrong.
Well, not really. I think that what they're trying to address is, you know, when you create an app, no matter how you distribute it, that app could be open source or closed source.
Mm-hmm.
It's really up to you how you create the app and what license you pick when mm-hmm. you're designing your app for the marketplace. So I don't really think it's an open source question or closed source question. Android is open source.
Right.
But it's really
more about...
So
this is on
about,
the app level, not on the...
It's on the. It's definitely on the app level.
Got it.
And it's really a developer question in terms of, you know, can you take our code and do something potentially malicious with it or even taking advantage of users? So I really think this is more to protect the users and the ecosystem than it is anything else. And it's, I don't see this. This is a license issue. I don't really think it's an open source or not open source question. It really just has to do with the developer agreement. So when you sign up as a developer, you download the developer kit and you have to sign this license that says, you know, I agree to these things. So,
you got it.
Yeah.
I think I'm missing.
Yeah, it sounds like the big question that you have there, Chad, and it's one that I still kind of fight with is, you know, we hear a lot of people say Google, you know, Android is open source. A lot of other people say, well, it's kind of open source. It's like fake open source. But I mean, you're the perfect guy to kind of ask this question. Is there such a thing as open source that isn't quite so open? That isn't like 100% open, do whatever the heck you want with this.
So, like,
where does that fall?
The only thing that's required of open source, depending on the license you use for your code, the big thing that's required is that you publish your code. You put your code out there for people to take a look at. Within those bounds, there are a lot of different licenses that you could pick up and use, some of which require you, for example, if you make changes, to contribute those back to the original project.
Okay.
Those kinds of things. It doesn't really require, interestingly enough, that you develop in the open. So in the case of Google and Android, what happens is they develop everything behind closed doors, and then at the time when they release it to the public, that's when they have to put the code out there, and they do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a lot of community involvement like there is in other projects.
Mm-hmm.
So this actually came up recently with Ubuntu announced that they're going to be doing a little bit more closed development on Ubuntu, some of the features, because they were getting a lot of negative feedback on some of the features, and it was impacting them negatively before the release even came out. So mm-hmm. they were getting all these negative vibes before people had even seen it, before people had played with it. And they're like, you know what, we're going to take some of this kind of in-house a little bit and do the development in-house, and then we'll put it out there. And they got some flack for that. But basically, it doesn't change the fact that what they're working on is open source. It's just that they're not developing it in an open way with a lot of community members.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So there's a little bit of a difference between an open community of developers and the open source code itself.
Okay.
So I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, that definitely clears it up.
That's what irks people the wrong way, though, a lot of times, right, is that Android is developed basically behind closed doors, even though it is technically open source code.
Eventually, the code is made open to the public,
right,
and that's
right.
where
but
the open part of it
developed,
comes in.
It's developed kind of like in a closed way, behind closed doors, and so I think that rubs people.
But it's not without precedent to say we're open source, but we have rules regarding this code.
Absolutely, and in fact, and there's also other models of open source too, where some of the code is open source and then there'll be additional modules, for example, that mm-hmm. You are required to pay to download, and those are not open source.
Okay.
So
and that's kind of similar to what you have in the Verizon Galaxy Nexus world, which is like, you know, most of the code is open source, but when it comes to the LTE antenna, you know, the code behind operating those kind of specific elements, that's not necessarily open source.
Exactly.
Yep. Right. Okay. Interesting. Cool. I'm glad that discussion happened, because it still kind of confuses me at times where I'm like, I know it's open, but it's kind of not, and whatever. Okay. So last week we talked a little bit about HTC and Apple. They had kind of a little settlement thing. Peter Chow is the chief executive of HTC, actually made a statement, I believe this morning, saying that HTC is happy with the settlement that they struck with Apple last week, but he calls the reports about the $6 to $8 per device, as far as, you know, Apple getting $6 to $8 per device sold in HTC's stock of devices going forward, calls that outrageous. Says he made no comment as far as correcting those figures, but he's saying that amount is outrageous. I don't know if that necessarily changes the possibility of it actually being that amount. What that really changes, but it could be a little bit different than that. But taking a look at kind of the aftermath of this, of the patent settlement, we have Samsung's mobile chief J.K. Shin basically said their plans haven't changed as they continue to pursue a legal resolution as opposed to doing something, you know, following in the footsteps of HTC and reaching a settlement. So Samsung doesn't appear to be kind of, at least publicly, doesn't appear to be backing down and wants to continue to pursue the legal kind of route for this. And then over in the Motorola Google camp, Google counsel has said that they wish to reach an agreement on licensing, put this all behind them, all the stuff that they have with Apple going on right now. But the bigger news is that Apple counsel later filed and said that they are also interested in arbitration as they wish to resolve, in their words, the dispute completely, almost showing like, hey, we're open to doing this with you guys too, which I would love to see.
Yeah, I think everybody would. I mean, it's such a distraction.
Yeah,
all these really patents is. And stuff, and nobody wins. You know, somebody has to pay somebody else. There's all kinds of negative publicity. I mean, nobody likes this, and I think that's part of the thought behind when these companies sign these deals, like HTC mm-hmm. did, mm-hmm. is look, you know, we'll pay for this, even if they don't pass that cost on to the users. They have to take a look at their books and say, well, what would it cost us if we had to go to court over this? You know, maybe we can make that up somewhere else. Maybe it's a hit to our bottom line. They don't necessarily have to pass that cost on to the end users. I know everyone says, well, it will eventually anyway. You know, maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. Maybe they'll sign a deal with somebody else where they get some more money to make up that.
Would it be significant enough for it to be that important to the end user, right?
Right, yeah. And so I don't think it's going to result, for example, in higher prices for their devices because they have to remain competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at the end of the day, if this all leads to some sort of settlement or some sort of agreement among the major handset manufacturers to put these patent lawsuits aside, it's a win for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, eventually that'll hopefully that'll lead to software patent reform. I know there's some efforts underway right now.
Yeah, you see a lot more of that these days,
yeah.
Kind of pointing in that direction.
Yep.
And then, of course, a Motorola Google kind of settlement in the way that HTC, you know, made their settlement with Apple, that would actually be pretty considerable just from the aspect that, you know, it is Google,
right.
And Google runs Android, obviously. And for them to do something like that could kind of signal to all the different partners that, hey, you know, it's okay to do that if it means peace in right. Android land.
Right. Well, it saves everybody a lot of time and money
yeah.
In the long run. And it's better for users in the long run because mm-hmm. they don't have to worry about, oh, I'm going to buy this device, but there's rumors about some sort of lawsuit. Maybe I won't be able to buy it in the future, or I don't know. It seems illegal somehow, you know. And it's really not. And it just hurts the user base in mm-hmm. the end. So I'm glad to see this kind of going on. It sounds like Samsung is still pretty bitter, though. And
yeah, well,
I think also they feel pretty confident with the lawsuits they have in
yes.
place right now with the LTE radio stuff. I think they feel pretty confident that they would be able to win those lawsuits in court. So, you know, I think there's two aspects to that. They're bitter and they've got a trick up their sleeve, and so I think that they've got good reason probably not to bury the hatchet quite yet.
Right.
So.
They each have a chip on their shoulder
yes,
between
yes.
Apple and Samsung. Like it almost feels like a high school rivalry.
Right, right.
You know,
yeah. yeah.
Out of the lockers and, you know, in between class is like, oh yeah,
yeah.
you know, neither side wants to back down.
Yep, yep.
So, well, I hope that it gets resolved. I'm hoping that we don't have to wait long to find out more of that. So taking a quick email, and I know this is a topic that we've talked about before, but I was curious to get your insight on this. Ted writes in, says, I have a question about the economics of ad-supported apps versus paid. How long would I have to use an ad-supported app before the dev made more money than if I had just bought the paid version? I have a great guitar tuner app called G-Strings. I have it as well, Ted, and I love that app, that I got on my first Android phone about 3 years ago. I've been happily using it. Ad supported all this time. The dev is getting ad impressions every time I use it, as opposed to getting a one-time payment of $2.51. Is there any point at which the ad revenues I generate by using the free app will actually make more money for the developer over time? He says, I guess I'm just hoping there's a way to do right by being a cheapskate. You are a cheapskate.
A cheapskate.
Cheapskate. There we go. Now I want a steak, and I want it cheap. Yeah. So what do you think about this? You know, for an app that you're using all the time, like yeah. I had this kind of discussion with myself when I found that I was using Plume all the time or Twitter apps in general, like yeah. you use them all the time. And if it's an ad supported one, you know, on one hand, you're like, well, you know, I open it all the time. So they're getting those impressions. But are those sizable enough?
Yeah. And I don't know about the deals that these companies make with whether they're using AdMob or whatever.
Yeah, I guess that probably
agency. I mean, so it depends.
Bit.
I mean, Rovio, for example, the maker of Angry Birds probably gets more revenue back somehow. They certainly get more eyeballs than probably many of the other Android apps on the marketplace today.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of companies who are based on the ad-supported
right.
model,
but
and
I think
they're doing
that,
okay.
I think that Rovio is one of those companies that can help us answer this question, right? Because Rovio was a paid app on the iPhone platform,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when they came to Android, they decided to go to ads, and they've pretty much stuck with that.
Yeah, they have.
I mean, I know on the new version of Star Wars, they're offering for you to pay and get the next upgrade to the Star Wars Angry Birds thing early. So they're doing a little bit of in-app purchase stuff. But I don't think if you buy that, I don't believe that that takes away the ads. It's just that you get kind of like early access or you get to it as soon as you want.
Yeah.
So
and wow, this is a really old article. I just did a quick Google search. Angry Birds, December 2010. So this was a couple of years ago. So maybe it's significant in that regard. Angry Birds on Android, those ads made at that point, Rovio, $1 million per month. I'd say that's pretty considerable.
That's pretty good. Now, of course, you have to weigh how many people loaded the app. You know, so if it's 1 million per month, then how many people bought the app, would have bought the app in that month? So how many, you know, it's kind of hard to tell the economics of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then what do you charge? Because I think there's a lot of good evidence, too, that shows a 99-cent app does pretty well, whereas a $3, $5, or I've seen apps, you know, up to like $20 for something very specific. That hardly anybody buys.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that really it's a question of economics and
yeah, and just volume. Because a company like Rovio, obviously Rovio is like at the top of the charts when it comes to app, you know, companies that were created around app development for mobile devices.
Mm-hmm.
That's just shot it out of the park. They've
right.
got a formula. It works. They're making great money. G-Strings, I love the app.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling it's probably not get. It doesn't have the same volume
right.
as
yeah.
as a game like Angry Birds.
Right.
So
right.
when you're talking about something like that, it might be more beneficial to the developer to just drop the money
mm-hmm.
and give it to them. That might actually be part of the equation, which is to look at the number of installs,
right.
kind of see how many people have downloaded. And if it's, you know, 20,000, 30,000, you know, if it's a smaller number compared mm-hmm. to some of the big boys that are, you know, pulling in millions of downloads, it might just be better to pay for it.
Yeah. And I think the best way if you're a developer, of course, first of all, you don't have to think of yourself as a cheap steak. As Jason said, or a cheapskate. I mean, if you don't mind the ads, get the version that has ads. I mean, it's really a user choice, and I think the best developers are putting apps that do both, right? Most of the pro
totally.
Versions out there, maybe they might come with a couple extra features, but most of the big thing with the pro versions is you don't get the ads, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they've got a solution for people that don't mind the ads, and they make money that way. They've got a solution for people that you know don't want the ads, and they make a little money that way. So I think the best developers will put in two versions of the
yes.
the app, one with ads, one without that you pay for, and then everybody's happy. So
yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Completely. That's the way to go. Great. Well, let's take a quick break and thank the sponsor of today's show, Ford, featuring Sync. It's a versatile entertainment features inside Sync. It's very cool stuff that you can do inside these new Ford vehicles. Things like browsing your music collection. You can do that by genre, album, artist, playlist, song title, all using voice commands and synced up to your device. It actually takes in a number of different devices, whether you have media stored on your phone, Android, iOS phone, through Bluetooth streaming or a USB drive, iPods, iPads. All of these devices can sync up to Sync and stream the media to it pretty easily with your voice. Playlists, if you want to control your media player and create a playlist on the fly, you can actually say something like play similar music based on the song that you're listening to or the artist that you're listening to. It can scour the available music and hopefully give you some music that you're also in the mood for. All of this is voice controlled, and that's kind of the key feature here. It allows you to keep your eyes on the road and your hands on the wheel and keep driving, keep your attention focused on what's most important when you're driving your vehicle. There's also iTunes tagging, actually. You don't have to worry about remembering the name of the song you just heard. Sync with My Ford Touch and HD radio technology with iTunes tagging actually lets you tag a song on the fly that you can then transfer that info to your iPod and purchase the song directly from iTunes when you're parked at a later time. Best of all, Ford offers Sync on every 2012 and 2013 Ford vehicle sold in the USA, including the 2012 Ford Focus. You can learn more about this as well as other technologies that Ford is bringing to its vehicles. It's just a ton of stuff if you go to Ford.com/technology. Ford's doing some really cool stuff right now in the world of technology, so I urge you to check it out. Ford.com/technology. And as always, we thank Ford for their continued support of All About Android and the TWiT Network. Thank you, guys. You are awesome. All right. How about we dive into some hardware? All right, so you've got a Google TV. I do not. So I relegate this to you.
Yeah, so I actually, I do. I have a Vizio.
Yeah, you have the CoStar, right?
CoStar, and a really great device. If you missed it, I actually demoed it on the show. I don't know how many episodes ago that was, five or six episodes ago.
That was episode 78.
Episode 78, so go check it out if you're interested in that. But and it actually came with something very interesting. It came with OnLive built in.
Have you used it yet?
I have not used OnLive, especially after I heard about their problems that they were having. So I thought that this was actually very, very interesting this week. LG OnLive has announced basically that their games are available on LG Google TVs. So if you have an LG Google TV or if you're planning to buy one, because they're coming out with some new ones, I think, even now, they've got a few more to release, some smart TV models to release. You can actually get the OnLive service. And it makes sense because this was built in. I did try it out. I just started it up. I didn't play any games, but just to see how it worked. It does. It works pretty good. It's actually a good fit with the Android Google TV platform because most of the games, if you don't know, OnLive is a streaming gaming service. So you can play games, and it doesn't require a whole lot of hardware resources.
It's like they hold the console in the cloud
exactly,
and you stream.
Yeah, you're basically streaming the video back.
Sounds like a latency issue, but most of the people that have used this have said that it's really more or less undetectable.
Right.
Maybe
yeah.
not undetectable, but very, very low.
Very low. So, I mean, I think this is a good move. I mean, we'll see where it gets them. I mean, they're kind of in a little bit of trouble on Live. From what I remember a few months ago, they got into some trouble, but maybe they're branching out. Maybe they're coming back. I think it's a good deal for people that like to play games and they don't want to have a lot of extra hardware, you know, a console, an Xbox or something sitting in their room. Maybe they're just a casual gamer. This is a good deal for them because they don't have to buy all that extra stuff, you know, and they can play a pretty good set of games. So
you just have to get a $50 controller.
Buy a controller.
At the minimum. And then is the service, how much for the service is it?
You have to pay for it.
Remember, is it a monthly fee?
I think it is. I think you can do a subscription or pay for the games.
Yeah.
See who's faster at
just
typing
out. Just play for free, they say on their blog. But
well, you can try. The thing that they do offer is demos. So you can actually try the game. I mean, this kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you remember, I guess they still do this in hotels where they have the, for a while in hotels, they would have like a Nintendo GameCube controller or something. And then you could like buy the games and you pay like $5 to play the game for one day or something like that. And, you know, my kids were always begging to play with it. Even though at the time it was already out of date when it came out, you know, like people had the Wii was already out and they were still using these old controllers and stuff. So it reminds me a little bit of that.
I've done that a couple of times. It was always just kind of
strange.
Yeah,
like
but you know, it was
Brothers
always like a system behind.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It was at least one system behind and it was, you know, they were asking a lot of money for it, you know, just like any pay-per-view service or anything like that. So an interesting idea. I'm glad it's available. I mean, why not? Might as well.
Absolutely. I think it's a kind of a match made in heaven as far as kind of building the value proposition on Google TV, which, you know, some people are having a hard time making that, you know, pulling the trigger on it. And it's kind of another way.
I think any added benefit is going to be good for everybody involved, LG, Google, and OnLive as well.
Sure. Another bit of hardware news, although I don't know how big of news this was, but it just kind of caught my attention. ViewSonic. Have you ever had a ViewSonic monitor?
Yes, yeah? I do. I had a 19-inch ViewSonic back in the day. And it was back at that time, everybody had 15-inch monitors,
right?
So I had a 19-inch ViewSonic with the little parrot.
Yeah, the little parrot in the corner.
And it was a great. It was actually a pretty good monitor.
The Register has an article on a ViewSonic VSD 220. It's a 22-inch Android mega tablet, as they call it. Which, I mean, really, I guess it's kind of a tablet, but you know, it's really like a monitor, a touchscreen monitor based on Android. Really depends on how you want to explain it. The screenshot shows what appears to be a honeycomb screenshot, but I know that it ships with ice cream sandwich. So, you know, if this is the kind of device that you're looking for, don't be scared off by that screenshot.
But a bigger backpack.
Yeah, totally. It has a stand in the back. So, I mean, you know, it looks more like a monitor than a tablet. But it's just a little different, I guess. It has a USB on both sides, 1920 by 1080 pixels. And, of course, you know, obviously it's a touchscreen device. So if it is a monitor, it's a monitor that's touchscreen. And there aren't a whole lot of those out there right now. Dual core, 1 gigahertz OMAP 4430 chip running ice cream sandwich. I don't know why I threw this in there. It just every once in a while I see something that's maybe a little bit different. And though I have no interest in buying this whatsoever, the thought of a 22-inch quote-unquote tablet just kind of makes me chuckle a little bit.
I don't know. I mean, I think it would be kind of cool to have at your desk. I mean, I was joking about the backpack thing because you really wouldn't want to lug that thing around.
Right.
But, I mean, I can see it being actually really useful. Especially for environments. I mean, you could put that in a tabletop. Just have it at like a Microsoft Surface, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You could have it in a tabletop design and do a couple interesting things with it there. If you were in a command center type environment where you worked on monitoring what's going on in an IT, you know, shop in a data center somewhere, maybe it would be good for that.
You'd have to obviously need what you're doing to tie into Android.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to have
it's based on Android
that'll work with that.
Totally.
But I mean, as a monitoring device, or I don't know. I'm trying to find some good uses for this.
Yeah, well, I mean, Reposter in the chat room has, you know, the one that comes up a lot on these different type of form factors, which is, you know, good in a kitchen or something like that, which actually, in this case, would actually be really good, you know, with the kickstand in the back and being a decent-sized kind of screen. In a kitchen, you know, for recipes or playing Netflix videos while you're cooking or whatever, might be good in a situation like that.
Yeah.
I don't really know if I'd have much use for it, but I'm sure somebody out there would.
The lack of tablet optimized apps would kind of be, because you'd
be overblown Twitter, at this
you'd
point.
You'd load up Twitter on a huge, you know, 22-inch thing, and you have a like almost a 4-inch tab for tweets, replies, direct messages.
Yep.
I mean, that would be a little bit painful to use.
Yeah, definitely. But I don't know. I mean, maybe ViewSonic is kind of testing the waters here, and maybe there'll be more apps available that take advantage of.
And it might be that if a company needs a specifically coded app for something that they could use this type of monitor. I remember going into a place like Disneyland, and they had their own coded app for their own tablets that I never saw anywhere else.
Yeah.
And so maybe this is something, maybe this could be used for a point of sale device. There's a lot of, once you bring this sort of, these options to the table, a coder or a company's imagination is really the limit. So I'm glad that I'm seeing it. I just, at the moment, I don't see anything.
Yeah, for me, it would be great, right? Because for me, I would be like, ooh, I'll just write some apps. I mean, if they don't exist, I'm sure I can find something really cool to do with it. But not for the average user. They're just going to want to download whatever it is. I mean, it would be good for viewing Netflix, too, right? I mean, Netflix would, I bet, looks awesome on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot easier, obviously, than holding up your phone or tablet. You know, you could have that actually sitting on your desk 4 or 5 feet away from you or further and still view it reasonably well.
Yeah, totally.
So I don't know. What was the price on that? Did they have a price?
That's a really good question. No, I didn't look up the price on this. I just thought the hardware was pretty nifty.
The hardware is cool, but I don't
see a price in
there.
Suggested price, 359. Is that pounds?
359. Yeah, so
Squiggles,
that's like
359. Squiggles.
That's like 450, 500, yeah. 500 bucks, probably 499 in the U.S.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think it'll take off, but that's,
you know, it's another one of those things. Like, yeah, I'm sure somebody will find a use for it. Yeah. It's not going to take the world by storm.
Yeah.
And then ViewSonic getting into the Android world a little bit more.
That's interesting too. I mean, display maker.
Yeah.
You know, coming into basically what is a mobile market, is really, really interesting. I mean, maybe they're looking at that as a way to kind of reinvigorate their business. I don't know.
Sure.
Speaking of displays, did you see the Samsung flexible displays that they announced?
Oh, yeah.
They
we talked about that a little bit, I think, last week.
Pretty cool. There's some new videos out. I just saw today on Google Plus where they were showing off the flexible displays. They basically had them sitting on a table, and they were like hammering on them with a hammer, you know? And they actually broke some poor guy's tablet or phone, and then they picked up the other one after they had hammered on it. And started bending it around and showing that it was, you know, still not only still working, but the fact they could bend it like, you know, almost
that's pretty cool
180
stuff.
Degree angles. It was pretty
probably not going to run into much patent kind of interference with that form factor either.
Nope.
So that might be the way for them to set themselves apart.
Right.
Speaking of Samsung, you've got some stuff in here on the S4. We're already starting to hear more about the S4.
Yeah, absolutely. So these rumors just came out today about Samsung Galaxy S4, and some people still haven't got the S3 yet, and they were already talking about S4.
Mm-hmm.
But there was some things that leaked, and this is via 3g.co.uk. They got some inside information from an anonymous tipster that the new phone will be 1080p capable, 5 inches. And probably most importantly, we'll have a really, really powerful processor. It's actually a 2 gigahertz quad core processor and an 8-core GPU. So this thing is built for speed. There's no doubt about it. If the rumors are true.
I mean, the S3 is no slouch at all as far as that's
absolutely
concerned.
The other thing,
super
the thing that's really interesting
device.
About this is that for one thing, they think it will have 64 gig of RAM. Right, which is a huge boost. I don't know of any phone that has 64 gig right now built in.
Yeah. No, that's a lot.
So that's a huge amount of RAM.
You're talking internal
storage.
Memory. Okay.
And then the other thing is what happens to the Note if this thing's going to be 5 inches, right, and the Note's 5.5, so does that mean the Note 3 is going to have to be like somewhere in between 7 inches? Like, what is that? 6.25 inches?
Right?
Yeah, I don't know. Or will this supersede the Note altogether? Maybe there won't be any more Notes. Maybe it'll just be this device.
One giant merge with the S4.
Right.
Well, probably not the S4, but eventually the S line having the S Pen built into it.
Exactly.
Wait a minute. That makes sense.
It does, doesn't it? And they're so similar anyway. The two devices are pretty similar except for the size.
Although they've done a really good job marketing them as independent devices and people side with one or the other.
Right.
It might be smarter for them just from moving more devices to keep them separated in that regard, because then people can identify with whatever side they want and continue to go down that product path.
Exactly. So it's interesting.
Cool. We'll find out. It's early to tell, obviously, with rumors, and you know you never really know whether it's going to turn out true or not. I like to think that, you know, when we're talking about these rumors so far in advance, that you know maybe half of what you know we end up seeing actually lines
up. This is way early, but it does actually. There were some other rumors from Samsung that they were working on a 1080p Super AMOLED display. So I don't know. I mean, maybe this kind of lines up with other things that are going on.
Sure.
Like you say, it's still really early. So
sure.
Yep.
Well, just a quick recap, because I happen to have them in the house here. I'm reviewing a few devices for Before You Buy. Actually, earlier today, I was on today's Before You Buy and talked a little bit about the Droid Razr HD. This is not the Max version, so it's not the one with the large battery, but actually, for the entrance device, well, I guess the M is more the entrance device into this kind of a series of phones. But as far as the Droid HD is concerned, it says a 2,500 milliamp hour battery, which is pretty significant. I actually, I could run this thing for a day and a half in San Francisco on 4G all the time, using it the way I normally use my Galaxy Nexus. And with the Galaxy Nexus, it's hard for me to get, you know, beginning to end of day.
That's a huge
usually
battery.
Have to plug it in. Yeah, a huge battery.
To fit in that thin of a form factor, too. I mean, usually phones that have that big of a battery are, you know,
really thick, but they've spread it out super thin just because, you know, I mean, the screen size is a 4.7-inch screen, so they've definitely, you know, they're taking advantage of the fact that the screen size means a bigger device, and they're kind of flattening out the battery versus kind of giving it that bulk. The industrial design on it, I love it. It really feels kind of premium. And I said in the before you buy review, you can see it if you want, that the camera is probably the weak spot of this. So if pictures are important to you, just got really weird, unexpected results with a camera, go into a scene to take a picture, and you could take three pictures and they'd all turn out differently, you know, either overexposed in one, white balance weird in another one. It was just very, very strange, and that was in decent light as well. So, but overall, $200 on Verizon. I think it's a pretty decent phone. I would say definitely, you know, just take a look at it. I just love the design of the device.
Yeah, I mean, it is very droidish. I mean, the everything on here from the bezel and the middle, the chrome. Mm-hmm. Piece here. I don't know if that's plastic or metal.
I think it's metal.
It's heavy though.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of pay for that in weight. It's a pretty heavy phone. But
see, I didn't think it was overly heavy though.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it is. I mean, I think
maybe side by side it would be, but
yeah, it's like pretty heavy compared to my Galaxy Nexus. Mm-hmm. Now the Galaxy Nexus is mostly plastic.
Right, yeah.
And big so if this
there.
Is metal plus the bigger battery, mm-hmm. you can see where that comes from. But you're right, I do like the design. I think if you like the you know, more square, cornerish, you know, rectangle design.
It's kind of been Motorola's hallmark, you know, starting with the Photon, that kind of edged in top and bottom.
Yeah, yeah, it is very kind of polished and good looking. It's a good
one thing you notice though, if you're looking at it, the notification light is going off right now on the front, and it's a huge bar. And so it's like most notification, and it goes really rapidly. So most notification lights are this tiny little dot that, you know, you get used to looking down at your phone to see if that dot is lighting up. This one, it catches your eye. It's like you can't avoid it. It's over in the corner blinking, and it pulls you to it.
So like at night, if you had this next to you,
totally.
It would totally like
you put it
keep
upside down on your dresser so that it doesn't light up the room because it's pretty big. So that could either be a good or a bad thing depending on who you are.
And there's apps you can turn that off.
Right? Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, absolutely. Right, and then I also have the LG Spectrum 2, also on Verizon. I haven't set it up yet. I'm actually going to be reviewing this. I'm going to spend the next week with it starting tonight. But this is kind of mid-range price. It's $100 on Verizon, 4.7-inch true HD IPS 720p display. Mm. There's a dual-core 1.5 gigahertz Snapdragon S4 in there. Pretty good specs for $100
That's
on
really
Verizon.
Good.
That's pretty nice. I guess if you put them up side by side, you know, it ends up being just a little bit bigger here. I'll pull it down in my over-the-shoulder shot here. You can kind of see it's just a little bit bigger than the Droid. So you kind of see how compact they made the Droid Razr comparatively. And the edges are just a little bit harsher and everything. But for $100, I mean, right off the top, I'm thinking, hey, this is not a bad not a bad device right off the top. So I'm going to spend the next week with it and kind of see how it fares.
Mm.
That is it. Let's, I guess, check out an email. Alan Bryant wrote in and said, hey, guys, minus Eileen. I know, sad face. I was wondering if you guys could come up with a good Android alternative to Apple's AirPlay. Our family is currently firmly in the Apple camp, but we are looking to buy the kids a 7-inch Android tablet because the iPad mini is still too expensive. Also would love to have a Galaxy Note 2 replace my iPhone 4S. I really love AirPlay functionality with my Apple TV, and I fear that just using Bluetooth will not function as well. I'd love to dip my toe in Android pool because it is so open and not gated off like the pool of the Apple Country Club. So basically, just looking for an Apple AirPlay replacement. The timing is kind of interesting here. I don't know if we necessarily have a perfect solution for you right now, but if you have or have not heard, Android 4.2, the latest version, does include support for Miracast. And though Miracast isn't necessarily a direct replacement, you know, a solution as compared to AirPlay, because I think AirPlay. Does that allow back and forth? Does that allow two-way communication?
I don't know.
Or is
I'm not
just
an Apple
one?
Person.
See, I'm not either.
Yeah, no, it's one way.
It's one
it
way.
It is one
right?
way. Okay,
yeah, send it to the Apple TV, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So then, I mean, in that situation, then Miracast would be a pretty close analog to that. It's only right now supported on the Nexus 4. Nexus 7 and Nexus 10 do not have support for this, which is kind of unfortunate. So, you know, I guess it remains to be seen whether this is built into a lot more devices going forward. But this also kind of ties into an article that was kind of gaining steam today, where Google is just basically saying they want to develop an open AirPlay alternative to Apple's AirPlay. And I guess reading through this, it's not clear to me whether that would be Miracast, although Miracast, I'm thinking, is not open.
It's not open, but it's an open standard. So, again, you get into semantics here, right? It's not open source, as far as I know, but it's open standard. So it uses Wi-Fi, for example, just standard Wi-Fi technology. Mm-hmm. There's no proprietary cables or things that you have to that you can buy a converter box, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So if your TV does not support it directly, you can actually buy a converter box, hook it up to your TV, and then you can use it, for example, with the Nexus 4, I believe, supports this. And it's a standard that is being pushed very heavily by TV manufacturers, which is important. So you'll see that built into TVs, whereas they're less likely, obviously, to build in support for AirPlay, for example, because mm-hmm. then they get locked into the Apple ecosystem.
Sure.
So I think you're going to see this being a feature, one of the additional, you know, you buy a TV these days and you've got about like
you've got
18
a whole,
million
yeah, catalog
icons.
Of
yeah, what does this thing do?
Well, things
what
that it's
what
compatible
doesn't it
with.
Do? It's, yeah. It slices bread and cures world hunger and cancer. But this is really cool. TV. I think you'll actually see this coming out on more and more TVs, and it is basically gives you AirPlay functionality. You can actually walk in and Google's done a lot of work on this with the Nexus Q. Mm-hmm. Which I think this article that you mentioned references that the Nexus Q had a similar concept where you come in, no matter whose phone it is, you know, as long as it's an Android phone, you put it next to the Q and you can stream your music to it. And I think that I think that it makes a lot of sense for them to go this way. And like you talked about last week, I think on last week's show, they're kind of stepping into this. They have the remote capability now. The Android app on the phone has a remote capability. If you have a Google TV,
right,
or if you want to play something on your browser on your computer, you can sync them up and play. And all that does is send a signal to your device to start playing that. Right.
Right. But so it's a little different than some of the stuff that AirPlay is doing, just in the direct show my screen on the big screen.
Right.
Like that's not happening, and I don't believe that's happening with the Q. But you're right. It's more of like a remote to trigger
something.
That device to do.
But it's
something.
Clear that that's where they want to go.
Yeah, right?
they seem to think that consumers want this functionality, and so they're working on it in multiple ways. So that's
the
goodness.
The only other thing that I would bring up is WiDi, which was showed off at CES. WiDi jumps on Wi-Fi and can send a 1080p signal to a display. Mm-hmm. The biggest problem with WiDi is that it is right now being developed by Intel. So anything that doesn't have an Intel chip inside of it can't use WiDi at the moment. So they were showing this off at CES a lot with laptops and things like that. And so maybe that will be opened up to, and it does almost exactly what AirPlay does.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Maybe that will be opened up to a greater range of devices, but Intel tends to keep things to themselves when it comes to standards and things like this.
Yeah, sure. And the other downside there is that Intel isn't in a lot of these devices, right?
No,
I mean,
you
don't buy a phone with Intel.
Exactly.
The Intel inside sticker on there. Yeah,
exactly.
They're just now
totally
getting into that space. And I don't think, I mean, chat room can correct me if I'm mistaken here, but even a lot of the smart TVs that are coming out, I don't think are based on the Intel platform. So, it could be too little too late, but we'll see.
Sure. So I guess the short answer is we don't have an answer for you, but stay tuned. But you know, the Nexus 7 is a great 7-inch tablet.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. All right, let's move into apps. All right, so I saw this last week, Google Plus allowing one-click download of Android apps. I wasn't quite sure how big of a deal I thought it was. It's kind of nifty. I just don't see it happening all the time. Although when you consider that Google Plus is filled with a lot of people really tied into the Android, you know, ecosystem and, you know, is certainly a great place to kind of share all that kind of stuff, I suppose it would get used. I don't know. I saw a lot of people freaking out about it, and I just kind of didn't get it for myself personally.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Is it is it just a convenience thing?
I think so. You know, it's like, it's like, hey, I just got this app. It's really great. I'm going to share it on Google Plus, and you can immediately, you know, launch right into your install screen.
Yeah.
From Google Plus, from the post.
Right, from the post. I mean,
it's just another way of kind of combining their services.
It's basically one less click, right? I mean, because you get a, if you get a link to the Play Store now and you open it on your phone, you go right to the app page and the install button's right there, or mm-hmm. purchase if it's a paid app.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's one less click.
Yeah.
I don't know. I agree with you. Cool. It's not really.
It's nice.
I think where it makes more sense, though, is if the Play Store becomes more like Amazon. And they seem to be trending that direction, right? They've got movies, they got magazines. Mm-hmm. The only thing they really don't have a lot of yet, of course, they have some things like devices now, phones, mm-hmm. things mm-hmm. like that. But what if they started selling other things more like Amazon? Then right. the one click, and they, you know, integrated that, then the one click becomes a good feature. Of course, they couldn't, you know, they have to be careful about infringing on Amazon's right to the what do they call it, the one click buy, or
one click purchase
you know, they got to be careful about infringing on that. But I think that, you know, if this moves into a bigger marketplace with actual you know, a lot of retail products and things like that, maybe that would be where it would be more interesting.
And then the person that shared it would get like some sort of commission.
Ooh, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool, I gotta say.
2%
incentive to share, yeah. Although then the stream has the chance of becoming just a right. big selling
yeah.
zone that you don't want to look at every
yeah.
time.
I can just imagine the spam, right?
Oh, man. Yeah, yeah. Right now, I take it all back. I don't know if I want to see that. And just another thing real quick. Android Police is really good at taking APKs that release and tearing them down and kind of looking for hints. And they took a look at the latest APK for the Google Play Store and finding a few things in there. Google Plus app reviews being tied, or your Google Plus account being tied to the app reviews that you make on the Play Store.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that kind of, in the grand scheme of the unification of all of Google's things, makes perfect sense for them to do that. Mm-hmm. That would include possibly your user photo attached to your reviews. It might also make people, you know, it might also give people a little bit more accountability
right.
to think twice before putting a review after 2 seconds of using a device yeah. and saying, this app sucks because I didn't like the typeface that they use in the intro screen. Right, you know, like right. maybe it would put that to bay a little bit. And yeah, just a few other things. That was the main thing, though, that I saw that I really thought was kind of interesting. So.
Cool.
And that is that.
Yeah, something else interesting happened this week with, there's been rumors around Niantic Labs, right, which is kind of like a Skunkworks project with inside of Google, and they've been putting out videos and stuff. And this week they finally released what they're doing, and it's kind of a reality, virtual reality gaming thing. I'm still not sure because not very many people have been able to check it out because it's in beta and you have to actually ask for a invite code.
Yes. Have you asked for one?
I asked right away. Yeah. As soon as I saw the news, I asked, and I still haven't gotten anything yet. So, but anyway, the game is called Ingress, and from the looks of it, it takes, it kind of combines like real life things in real life with, what's, it kind of puts it into a game form so that as you're walking around, you know, you might see something, take a picture of it with your phone, or discover something interesting about it. And it actually works all that into the game as you're playing the game. So it's kind of like a real life game, as a kind of like a, it does, I don't know, it's, it doesn't look like it's going to be a strategy game, but maybe something where you earn points for mm-hmm. recognizing or contributing in some way. It's pretty cool. The video looks really, really cool. What a lot of people are saying is, oh, wouldn't this be cool with Google Glass, right?
So yeah,
you put
no
on
kidding.
Your glasses and then all of a sudden things start popping up. Oh, there's this point of interest over here and you go look at it and all of a sudden you're seeing things through the glasses that aren't really there, but that are in the game and, kind of combines the virtual and real worlds.
I love how in the video they're like running into other people playing the game. Wow, that's pretty ambitious.
Yeah,
to think that two people would be in the same spot playing this game. But yeah, I guess it would take a lot of people, you know, obviously downloading this app and, well, having access to it, you know, outside of the limited beta, in order for that to happen. I love the idea of this type of a game, though. Very cool to kind of give you another reason to kind of get out, or give you a distraction while you're out and about, and be like, okay, how can I tap into where I happen to be right now? Kind of in the same way that we do with like Foursquare, you know, it's kind of gamified, checking into locations. When you get somewhere, you check in for whatever reason. Maybe this is kind of another way to do that. I just wonder how good I'd actually be at it. When I really look at my day-to-day life, I really don't go very far. I live pretty close to work. As sad as it may seem, my life is kind of in this 5-block radius. I probably would be horrible at this game, but I still want to see it.
It makes sense now that they came out with – Niantic Labs also came out with this field trip application,
right?
Which is similar. I don't know why I'm not getting not getting any network here, but it's basically an application that allows you to it's kind of like for if you're just walking around and there's something interesting nearby, if you've got it set up, it'll actually tell you what's interesting that you're walking by. So perfect for cities or towns that you've never been to before. You're walking around and all of a sudden you get a notification and it says, oh, by the way, this building on your left is a bazillion years old and it was, you know, built by gnomes and all this kind of fun stuff. Of course, that wouldn't happen. But, you know, so it makes kind of sense. They were working on this. They released it. And I'm like, why did they do that? You know, and now it's like, oh, wait a second. That actually makes sense with the new game that they're coming out with, because it seems like there's elements from Field Trip that are going to be built into Ingress. Or what is it? Ingress?
Yeah, it's Ingress.
Ingress. So, yeah, cool stuff.
Yeah, very cool. I'm looking forward to kind of seeing more. And if anybody actually who listens or watches the show has had any experience with this, send us a review, aaa@twit.tv. Let us know in video or email or whatever, kind of what you found from the experience. I'm very curious. Anytime Google has a limited beta invite-only thing, you know, that they release out to the public, I'm always very curious to see what exactly it entails. Yeah. And one other thing to mention before we move on to another email, we talked about it in previous episodes. Eileen, I believe, was probably the one that talked about it most, Echo Phone, which is an iOS Twitter client, and it's been kind of in various stages of testing and everything. It finally hit the Play Store and is available now on the Play Store. You can get it in a beta version. I've been playing with it a little bit. I can't say I'm super sold. Wow, my screen is dirty. Can't say that I'm super sold with it right now. I realize that it's kind of beta and, you know, things are a little slow moving in it. It's okay. It's just, it's hard to pull me away from what I'm already used to. And I don't know.
Do you use Twitter?
Yeah.
I don't use Twitter anymore. I mean, I post to Twitter because there are people that use Twitter that follow me there. But I mean, I'm so much into Google Plus now. It seems like it's superseded my Twitter use.
I mean, I definitely use Twitter still. I don't like to post the same thing to all different services. Mm-hmm. I don't like to kind of spray all the services with one post.
I'm a sprayer. I spray. Yeah.
I try not to because I feel like each different place kind of has its strength. You know, Google Plus, I love posting things to Google Plus that are a little bit more substantial, like a little bit more like, let's have a conversation about it. Twitter is like my... I can't believe I'm about to eat this gigantic bowl of chili. Yes, I'm the guy that tweets about what I eat. Sometimes. Well, I did yesterday, and normally I don't. But, you know, Twitter's like just junk off the top of my head. Yeah. Google Plus is more thoughtful stuff.
So you actually interact with both separately?
Yes.
Wow.
It's a challenge.
What about Facebook?
Yes. That's my personal family stuff. And I've also, this is so off topic, but I've also noticed that on the weekends, my tweeting completely goes away. Like I stop tweeting because what I'm doing on the weekend is spending a lot of time with my family.
Right.
And so my Facebook posts go way up. It's a strange world.
Interesting.
Yes. And Yoshi Oni in the chat room points out Flipboard is great for managing all these sources in one place. So if you need one app to monitor all of those, Flipboard is actually really good
for incoming.
In that regard. Yeah. But yes, Echo Phone is out. Check it out and see what you think. Personally, it's hard for me to give up Plume. I'm such a Plume fan, and I've been for quite a while now.
Now, aren't you worried about these third-party apps with Twitter?
Yeah, Twitter's that's another kind of worry. Absolutely. Twitter's making it very difficult for third-party clients to really survive. And I'm actually surprised that we still continue to see new clients.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad when you think about it, because that's been such a source of really cool kind of innovation. You know, app developers have new ideas to make the Twitter world better, and they create it in their apps, and now they're being dissuaded from that. And they're actually going away. Ones that are established are going away. Marlon, the guy from Trinidad, wrote in and says, good day to the new Eileen-less AAA crew, Sniff. Yes, this is probably going to come up for the next while. I'm sure you're going to hear us say this because we're all very, very
sad.
I'll
make Eileen happy, though.
Yeah, I know.
She feels missed.
It sucks that she's not with us anymore on this show anyways. She's still alive. But. Marlon, guy from Trinidad, says, here with an excellent deal that you have to pick up immediately. The Humble Bundle 4 for Android 4 is out and in its last days as of this recording. Let's see here. It ends this Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern time. If you pay more than the average, you can get a total of 11 Android games plus soundtracks. You also get copies of the games for Windows, Mac, Linux. I mean, the Humble Bundle, they always do this well, and it's always such a great deal. They've got some pretty cool apps. I haven't bought it this time around, but I know I've heard of Swords and Soldiers HD. We're looking at Walking Mars right now.
I tried that one out. I bought this. I picked it up as soon as it was out, and it's kind of cool. You can fly around. You're like, you get a jetpack, and you have to basically introduce new vegetation to Mars.
Oh wow, this is really sweet looking. It kind of has a Metroid feel to it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a little bit of a puzzle plus. A little bit of science mixed in. You know, you got to feed the plants some cases to break down barriers, and it's somewhat scientifically based. So
that is,
it's a cool game. I mean, it's,
I'm sold on that one.
Yeah, I think it's worth. I don't know what the,
and that's
the,
just one out of,
that's one out of the six or seven.
All of them. I mean, right, I played. I forget how to say, Machinerarium. And it's just a beautiful game. It's more of a puzzle. Point-and-click adventure that you will, move throughout this world. You have this little guy who can squeeze down and get back up. I actually think Ron reviewed this on a arena before, but it's just a very beautiful world. You're this robot that's trying to move throughout the world, and you're...
I've heard of this. Yes.
I mean, it's just beautiful. I mean, this is just the second one out of all 11 of the apps.
And was this a big PC game?
Yes. Like, it started on PC. Okay. It started on PC. I believe it was Flash based.
Maybe it was a Flash game. I know I've heard of this one outside of Android and probably a few years ago.
But then, I mean, you just look, here's Crayon Deluxe. I mean, Crayon Physics Deluxe, which I believe that we've had on the show as well. This is just full of really, any one of these that I click is going to be fun to play. So
they're all worth the price.
Right.
Each one of these individually is worth the price that you'll pay for all of them.
Right.
I already had Cogs. They're starting to introduce a few apps that they've already put out. So like Cogs was available in a previous Humble Bundle, I think. I think that's where I got it, in the third one or the second one. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But it's still way worth it. And what I love about it is it's available for Linux, Windows, I think Mac and Android, right? All of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Truly cross-platform.
Truly cross-platform. And they are a little bit big. Mm-hmm. So I think one of them I downloaded, I forget, it might have been the Mars one, I think it was like 200 meg download. So, they have a lot of graphics and stuff in there. So it's understandable why it's that big, but it's just like, when I first started downloading, I'm like, "Ooh, wait a second, that's going to take up a lot of space."
To wait till later.
Yeah, heads up on that. Of course, on your PC or something, it's no big deal, right? I mean, you've got terabytes of space. It's like, sure. Who cares? But on the phone, all of a sudden, you're second guessing, like, "Ooh, do I really want to download that?"
Yeah, totally, totally.
But yeah, it's worth buying. And the other thing I'll point out too is that, interestingly enough, if you go to the donate site where you buy it, what I always like seeing is that the Linux users always donate more than the Windows.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
Linux
over
users
here.
Always are more, I don't know if it's just that they're more generous or what, but Linux users always donate way more than Windows or Mac.
I'm surprised that this number is so low. I donate $20 in a heartbeat to get all 11 of these games. That's $2 a game. Yeah, just really good. And then you get to choose, if I zoom out, you get to choose what amount of your donation goes to charity, goes to the mm-hmm. developers, to the humble tip, the folks actually putting this on. You can decide all to charity, split the difference.
Yeah.
I really like the Humble Bundle. Yeah. It's really good.
And it always seems like they support the EFF.
Yeah.
As one of their charities, which, you know, I like that too. So anyway, really cool stuff.
Check it out, humblebundle.com. And they seem to do this, twice a year or something? I feel like there was one not so long ago.
Every 2 or 3 months they do it. Yeah.
There's one not so long.
They're doing more and more of them lately because they're really successful. So mm-hmm.
Excellent. All right, let's dive into the arena.
Woo! To enter, one lives. Android Arena.
Woo-hoo! All right, so last week we had all movie-themed games. By some strange coincidence, all three of us had chosen games that had a movie theme to them. And I'm not really that surprised with this. Angry Birds Star Wars comes in tops. That was Eileen's game, 59% first place Angry Birds Star Wars. I mean, it's pretty freaking cool. And
it's a good game.
I generally think, you know, for myself, a game that I choose to play Angry Birds, I'm kind of like a little bored with them. Mm-hmm. But this one is just so awesome. Like, it's hard to not get sucked into it. Army of Darkness Defense, that was mine, came in second at 22%. Wreck-It Ralph came in third at 18%. But obviously, by and large, Angry Birds Star Wars wins. The Force is with Eileen. So this week we have, we're doing three apps. Obviously, Aaron, you have a cool app to show off. Chad has an app. I'll go ahead and start with mine. It shouldn't take me too long. It's actually a game that I haven't spent an amazing amount of time with, but what time I have spent with it, I've really enjoyed. And it's just kind of, you know, If you've noticed, anytime I cover a game, usually it's some sort of like throwback, like retro style game. And this is no different. It's a game called Oregon Trail, not Oregon Trail, but Oregon Trail. So
like your bodily organs.
Yes.
Okay.
Like it's just a zombie story.
Got it.
This is actually a zombie story. It's made in a kind of old retro kind of style. And, you know, I've made it to this particular point. I'm going to go ahead and break out the guns and clear a path because I've got all of these zombies coming. I haven't actually played through this, so I don't know what I'm supposed to do or anything, or if this is just like a cutscene. But basically, it's kind of that was easy and ridiculous. It's basically just like a little old school retro game where you travel along. You can kind of build up your arsenal. You can see I've got all of my co-defenders. On my team to help me battle all of these zombies.
There's how the wagon is a station wagon in the game.
Yeah, it's a station wagon. You know, it'll break down. So sometimes, Eileen has a broken leg. I don't know how that happened, but it happened while we were driving. Okay, good to know. And you just kind of drive along and you encounter zombies and you get out and you shoot them. I'm hoping at some point heavy rubble has rendered your car stuck. Well, that's too bad. So when I actually get to a shop where I can kind of stock up on stuff, I can actually use money that I get through zombie battles to do things like equip my station wagon. See, I have no muffler, so I'm probably making a lot of noise and possibly, attracting a lot of zombies to me. Or maybe I can't even go. Let's stop here then. Let's see. I'll go ahead and repair the station wagon. Yes, repair. Time passes. It's very old school, kind of like taking your resources and applying them. Use your money to buy new resources. Oh, you need to buy ammo. You can do that. I passed up some scrap earlier in the game, and maybe it's going to bite me in the butt here. But it looks like after enough time, I'm able to repair, I hope. Otherwise, this review is going to be, repairs failed. I just want to continue.
Looks like you can give it more scrap. Maybe it'll be better.
Yeah, I just don't know if... Oh, I see. Yeah. See, I'm still... Like I said, I'm still learning it. But it kind of sucked me in earlier. I was having a lot of fun with it. Repair successful. Oh, wow. So okay, let's see if maybe I can get out or something. But anyways, I've got my whole party. If I want, I could. Here, let's just see what happens. I'm sorry, Chad.
You're killing me.
No. I'm sorry, Chad.
Oh no!
Now watch.
That. Awesome. Oh, that is gruesome.
Oh,
no. You missed. Oh,
yeah.
No. I had purple hair in that. That's not.
I'm sorry. I shot down to the ground once to see if you dance, which you didn't. So then it was just like, all
you
right.
Put me down. I wasn't even affected.
I'm sorry, Chad. I'm sorry. I had to show something action.
Jeez. Well, Eileen had a broken leg.
Yeah, but I don't.
No.
I'm not doing
I
that.
I had to go.
Anyways, it's a really silly game. And as far as I can tell in my early days of playing this, I don't even know if there's really any skill involved. The only skill involved is when zombies are coming at you, you just have to like point at them and you shoot your gun and you know, kill them in a very low res sort of way. But it's just kind of fun to plug through it. It's called Oregon Trail, not Oregon Trail, but Oregon, as in your organs trail. And it's silly, but I love it. $3 or $2.99 in the Play Store. Check it out and have a chuckle. I thought it was pretty hilarious. By the way, that's 2 weeks in a row that I've had some sort of undead game in the arena.
You're into the zombies,
nice.
Aren't you?
I do like zombies, and I'm like totally into The Walking Dead right now, so maybe it's like getting into my brain. My brain.
Uh-oh.
Brain. Okay. Sorry. All right. Aaron, would you like to go next?
Sure. Well, as per usual, my app is usually either a tool or a game or something, and a lot of times you have to be rooted to run my app, and this week is no exception. So my app this week is Screen Standby. And this is something I've been looking for a while. I think I found it on Lifehacker or some site, and I tried it out, and it really is really good. So what it does is, you know, if you use the MHL connector, for example, or you're linking in some way up to a TV, and you're watching, you know, you're running a video on your phone, maybe Netflix or whatever, you're in a hotel, and you're watching the video on the big screen in your hotel. One of the problems is that the battery runs low really fast on your Android device, because the screen is on usually the whole time. And when you try to, if you hit the power button,
then
the app says, oh, they're not watching anymore. So I'm going to turn the app off as well as the display. And so what this app does is it actually allows you to turn off just the display. So you still have all functionality. The touchscreen still works on the phone. But it basically just turns off the display itself. So the way this works is, here's the app down here at the lower a portion of the screen. I'm going to go ahead and put that on, and that's a little message that says if it freezes, the way to turn it back on. And so basically there's just a few buttons. It's not very complicated. Basically all you do is hit turn off backlight. When you do that, the backlight will turn off. Okay, so the phone is dead. But we still got it. Right, so if Chad shows the screen, you can still see what's on my screen. So I can actually, if I know where I'm pointing, I can actually go to Netflix.
Oh, you are good.
And then we can watch. See, there's still nothing on the screen. So the screen is out. I'm actually saving battery pretty well. Mm-hmm. And let's see if I can start. I think this is Cake Boss from my Netflix queue. So we'll see how good the network is here at the Brick House. But you can see that the display is still off. So really for anything, it could be a game. It could be... you know, just whatever it is that you're showing on the screen, and you don't want to waste your battery. That's bitten me more times than I know, when I'm sitting there and I forget to plug in the phone or whatever, and I'm watching a movie and all of a sudden it turns off and I'm like, what's going on? And of course, the screen's been on the whole time. So so if you're like me and you do this, you use this when you're traveling, just turn the screen off. And when you want to get it back on, it's pretty simple. You just press the power twice and the screen will come back on. So now my screen is back on, and I can go do whatever it was that I was doing. So
awesome.
Very cool little app. You do have to be rooted. So there's another reason to root your phone. I always like to point those out when I come on the show. Lots of good reasons to root your phone, and it's especially easy if you have a Nexus device. So
yeah, rooting, yeah, you got to be responsible with it, but it brings some really cool options as far as apps are concerned. Yep. Some of the things that you wish that you could do with your device, you actually can do when you're rooted.
Absolutely.
And you're not allowed to, you know, able to do it without.
Right,
so.
Like Wi-Fi tethering and those kinds of things, which are also good to have.
That's great.
So there you go.
Screen Standby, and that appears to be free.
Yep, simple little app, and I like their. I don't know if I think Chad showed on the Google Play Store. I love their little logo at the top, which has a little. There it is. So it's like a little bit of code that they're writing there to tell how the app works. Right, put the screen to sleep. Screen.power equals off.
But not your device.
In the screen, comments. Save, battery save, yep. Annoying, remove.
I love that. Great. I mean, as someone who, you know, dabbles in programming, I love that they have that on their
That's awesome.
Logo.
Cool. Screen Standby. I love it. It's awesome. Chad, what do you have, sir?
Okay, so this app has been out for a little while. It is the... So, how to describe this app? Let me just start off by saying it's called Snapchat. You may have heard of it before. The idea behind this is you can send pictures to your friend, but they have a limited time to live. So they will be deleted after the viewer receives them. There has been talk about using this app for nefarious purposes amongst the teenage crowd. I installed it for the shows, and there was a few Twit employees on, and it's actually funny because I sort of installed it as a joke and then started to use it amongst my friends. So let me go ahead and show off how it works, and then I guess I'll get into why I feel like it sort of makes sense. It's very simple. When you launch, you sort of have a little bit of a home screen. And let's find the focus point. There we are. So you have a little bit of a home screen. These apps, these right here that have the boxes that are closed, these are Snapchats that have come in. Oh, and I pressed and hold that came in that I can look. So you see this countdown down here. Luckily, I have friends that... will
send you stuffed animals.
Yeah, exactly. Send me stuffed animals, not anything else. And so it will load in a few pictures, and if you click it, it'll then it's available to actually view. So Curly sent me this one. I'm not so sure that this is actually. Let me just open it up. Okay, so he sent me a whole bunch of screwdriver screws, and that one only lived for about 3 seconds. So let me go back.
I can't believe you have that picture on your phone.
I know,
Chad.
Right? Oh, geez.
Shock.
And so look, there's a picture of a cat, right? And so what it is it's very and then when I take my finger off it goes away, and then it's time to live is over. Hmm. Another thing to notice is when you click one. Kitty cat. And you click off, it's still counting down. So if it's a image that you want to see, you want to look at it. Now, everyone's idea once they join Snapchat is they go, well, why can't I just take a screen grab of the Snapchat? And on an iOS device, this is cross-platform, so you can do this with iOS users or Android users. On iOS, which is I downloaded on my iPad at first, when you try to grab a screen grab, there's a little bit of a latency, and so it'll close the screen the photo before you can grab a screen grab. On Android, I have found that it is actually not that way, and you can, let's say that I really want to keep this photo of a dog. If I hit
you gotta hold him.
Yeah, there you go. I actually have that saved, and now that's in my photo roll, right? So the only thing is that Snapchat actually realizes what I've done, and it sends a message to the person who sent me that photo saying, they grabbed a screen grab of it. So you'll see, if I go back through things that I've sent, you can see that this one, someone took a snapshot, and there's a different... Right, someone took a screenshot! Oh, my gosh! And then to send, I bet that this one, because this was, oh, look, it's me. This is a screenshot shotception, and I can try to grab it if I want. But, and then if, of course, to send your own screenshots, or Snapchats, I should say, you click the photo button, and then you can take a photo. There you go. And then you can also annotate it a little bit. So if I wanted to say, draw on it and say,
Hi. From.
Oh, boy.
A. And then you can also type on the screen if you want. And I think I've gone into. There we go. Once you turn off that, you can type on the screen. So I could say, you know, this boss is us. This us. Anyway.
Thus us.
I'm very bad at typing.
Yes. And then no, I like that. Thus us.
You can move this around, put it on my eyes, you know. And then I'll send this to. And I get to decide how long this one will live. So this one, let's say, well, this isn't my best. Let's only allow people to look at that for 7 seconds. Go ahead and click that and send it off to, who do I want? Cheeto's been sending me stuff. Curly has been sending me stuff. I'll send it off to those two people. And then that's sent. So originally it was sort of a joke and I downloaded it. And then I found that I ended up using it because there isn't, because you know that it's going to get deleted off the person's computer, it's a very informal way to inform people about what you're doing. So it's like Twitter, but for pictures, because you can take a picture of your food and you're not worried that it's going to be, it's like, sure, there's a picture of my food, but there's no database of all these dumb pictures that I'm taking. If I'm in the car, I can take a picture and I say, hey, I'm in the car. I'm you know, driving to the store. So it's like a status update for photos, and it works really well because you know that it's not going to be cluttered later. It's like because it's so ethereal and is gone so fast, it's just like, oh, who cares if I, you know, send another photo of my cat. I've sent 13 already.
Is it more like Twitter or is it more like chat roulette?
Now that's the thing. So you don't actually message strangers. So these are all people you know.
Right.
So if you want to use it in nefarious ways, I could easily see how you could do that. By the way, people who are using once you can only be signed into one device. I found I couldn't be signed into my iPad and my phone. Once I signed into my phone, it disconnected the iPad from my user account. So I stopped using the iOS version a few weeks ago, and people said that you can if you time your clicks and key presses correctly, you can grab a screenshot of a photo if you like start the screen grab and then hit click the thing. And I'm so apparently on both sides you can actually grab. So it's like really if you want it will be permanent if you really think about it. But most of the time, I will just send one and it's just like, this is what I'm doing right now. Here's a photo of it. And I don't have to worry about it being, you know, it's less permanent than, say, Instagram. And it's also more direct because I can just send, you know, three right. people that I know that are going to care about that photo. Mm-hmm. Instead
more
of,
about one person to right. one person. It's not really a network.
No, or, it's not. It's not a social network at all.
It's more like a different type of MMS.
Right.
Almost. An
exactly.
MMS that self-destructs in 10 seconds.
Yes, exactly.
I know. I keep thinking of like Mission Impossible or something.
Yes,
like there's
right.
got to be a way to use this kind of as a Mission Impossible type, you know, like a game where
right.
people are in a store and they've got to find items and then you send them like a shopping list, but they only have 10 seconds to memorize the shopping list. And you see like how many items they can bring back and get it right. I don't know. There's got to be some cool applications for this.
Yeah.
Beyond the other ones.
Even if it were impossible to take a screenshot, it's always possible to take a camera and point it at
right.
your device.
Yep.
So
right.
don't think that anything you send on right. this is safe.
Right. right.
And so pictures will end up on Reddit.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
Period.
And so with that being said, the device of it just being really spurious and yeah. and it doesn't matter. Right. I like that device in a photo sharing application. The other thing that they seem to tout is that it is faster than MMS. So if you really wanted to do sort of a quick one-to-one sort of chat, you know, being that it's called Snapchat, it's much faster and so you can do that sort of stuff. It's free. So if you and your friends want to send silly Snapchats to each other, you can do it without costing anything.
Cool. And certainly some people like it. I mean, it's got between 1 million and 5 million yeah. installs. So
right.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Right.
Absolutely. Radical. All right. Had not heard of that one. So we have three very different apps in today's arena. Was your favorite Oregon Trail, Screen Standby, or Snapchat? Check out aaapoll.com/86. That's aaapoll.com/86 for the episode 86. And let us know which is your favorite of the apps that we talked about today. Early reports are in, and Oregon Trail is ahead with 50%, but that's only with a total of 8 votes. We will follow this closely. Snapchat it's creeping up there.
Oregon Trail is something that I'm going to be downloading.
Screen standby is catching up.
On a long bus ride, Oregon Trail looks like
something fun. It's totally silly.
Yeah.
But it made me chuckle when I was playing it, and there were actually parts of it that required a little skill.
Yeah.
A little bit.
But it's also more fun. It looked like you could upgrade your car. And totally.
There's upgrades.
You have a connection to the people who are traveling with you. It seems very. Did you ever play FTL? Faster than Light Travel?
No.
It seems very much like that.
There was a part of Oregon Trail where it was kind of like a missile command where you're down at the bottom behind a barricade and these zombies are coming down from the top of the screen at different angles and you have to like shoot them from your angle before they get down to where you are. It's totally old school
stuff.
That's
cool, though.
But it was actually kind of stressful when I was playing. It's like, okay, this is fun. So anyways, check them all out. Oregon Trail, Screen Standby, Snapchat are the apps this week. Next week, Father Robert Ballesterre is going to be joining us. He's been on the show in the past, and I'm super stoked to have him back.
Yep.
He's just always great to have on the show. Ron will be back. Absolutely. He tells me he's going to be in the studio, so I'm going to hold him to it. But Aaron, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Go ahead and plug anything you have going on right now.
You know, the best thing to do if you're interested in following what I have to say or talk about is just to go to Google+, add me to your circles. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook, as I said before, but the best place to kind of follow and engage if you want to actually have a conversation, which I'm doing more and more of on Google+, that's the best way, because if you write a comment, I'll probably reply if I'm interested in what you're saying. So definitely follow me there. You know, I do a lot of hacking on stuff, a lot of making, a lot of talk about Linux, of course, because on the Twit Network here, I also co-host Floss Weekly, and occasionally Chad is good enough to rope me into This Week in Google as well. So, and of course, my favorite show is all about Android.
Wow.
So.
Woo!
Uh-huh.
I won't say that until I'm on another show about any other shows.
You say that to every show you're on.
But,
no, it's okay.
Yeah, no, follow, you know, I'm here, you know, more than I'm doing any of my own podcasts anymore. So follow me here on the I was good enough. Tony took some pictures of me and actually got me on the site. So nice. If you go to people, I think it's the people link or whatever it is on twit.tv, you'll actually see my little bio and stuff. So.
Boom. That's
very cool.
Legit.
I feel legit now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on. We're always super stoked to have you on the show. You bring a lot to the show, and we really appreciate it. There you are.
Ta-da.
Nice shirt.
Look at that.
Nice Atari shirt.
Man, Tony takes a good photograph.
Yes, he does. Chad, go ahead and plug. What you got going on?
I produce a whole bunch of shows on the Twit Network, Twig, Twit, and MacBreak Weekly, as well as help out on some of these shows. I do my own podcast all about Minecraft. If you want to check out some Minecraft goodness, go over to omgcraft.com. We just did an episode answering your emails. So, yeah. We just did that.
And what's your favorite show that you work on, Chad, here?
My favorite show to work on? Mm-hmm. I work on all too many shows. All About Android.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Better good. Be. Yeah. No, yeah. There was no hesitation there, except for after the two or three seconds. That
two or
took
three
me.
Seconds. You know.
And then there was no hesitation.
You've got not at all.
You've got a lot going on there on the board. I mean, that's...
Right. I had to switch around.
Right.
Yeah.
It takes a while to answer.
I was distracted, all right?
Okay.
You can find me at about.me/Jason Howell or on Twitter at Jason Howell. That is it for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in for All About Android. Leave us a voicemail. Let us know in your own voice what you think about Android. 347-SHOW-AAA. You can always leave us drop us an email or a link to a video mail in an email. Send that to aaa@twit.tv. Find the show on Twitter. We are at Android Show. Show notes can always be found at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find past episodes there, as well as iTunes, YouTube, all the usual suspects. And finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, at live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.
Bye, chat room.
Chat room, you're the best. No, you're the best. You and you and you.